Hello and welcome back to this bonus series of the Sunday Podcast.
Yep, it's the big one. The Olympics is here.
I'm Ollie Lum.
I'm Matt Seddon.
And over the next 10 days, we're going to be bringing you daily content on Twitter, Instagram and here on the pod.
We're covering all the distance events from 800 metres right up to the marathon.
It's going to be a good one.
Enjoy.
Right, guys, welcome back to our last Tokyo bonus. I can't believe the Olympics is over already. We hinted yesterday we got a special guest today, and it's a very special guest. You've got episode one podcast man, Josh Griffiths, Mr. Marathon himself. How are you, Josh? Welcome back to the pod.
Hi, boys. How's it going? It's a pleasure to be back.
Pleasure to have you, mate. Pleasure to have you. We've got you here for one reason, just to discuss that marathon last night. Obviously, you watched it. And so, what do you think, mate? Initial thoughts? How, you know, Kipchoge reigning supreme once again?
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting and really tough looking race. I mean, I think the winner, you know, Kipchoge, you could have probably guessed that before. I think he was the favourite, but then behind him, there was all sorts of crazy things going on. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to get into, I guess. But I think the winner was kind of... You could have maybe predicted it beforehand, but a lot of the things was completely unpredictable, as you've seen across events.
Well, yeah, talking about predictions, I'm going to hold my hands up. I said a few times this week, I was like, nah, he's not going to win. I feel a bit bad. Sorry, Eliud. Sorry for doubting you, mate. But yeah, he's come back, and what an incredible run from him. He looked kind of at his best, like as good as we've seen him, really. I think for me, the reason I was slightly doubting him, I just thought we'd seen the best of him before, like obviously with what happened in London last year, and kind of the opposite with really cold conditions. He really struggled. And I just thought kind of he was a bit more used to that rhythm running that was a bit very even paced and very set on going for those fast times. So I thought he would get beat. But fair play, like he looks incredible, didn't he?
Yeah, I think even if maybe he's not at his best anymore, he's still... a lot better than everybody else at the moment. And I thought it was a bit of a tough turnaround because he raced in late April and this is very early August. But no, he was just a level above everyone else, as you could see. I think it was the biggest winning margin in Olympic marathon history last night. So, or for a very long time anyway.
Yeah, I mean, one thing which is apparent to me, Josh, is was he even sweating? Like, what? Honestly, he looks so chilled. And I think that is a huge fact. You know, you're looking at the guys... Bashir and Abdi, Nagai in second and third, and their vests were dripping, you know what I mean? It was sticking to them. Obviously, Kipchoge must have been sweating, but he just looks so, like, just looks supreme, man. And one thing as well is I thought he takes his drinks so well, and I think it's because of the sub-2-hour attempts he's learned how to be so efficient at the drink station. You know, he's got these bottles, they're, like, the perfect size. He takes a few sips, chucks it aside. The other guys were, like, I know Kipchoge did it a bit, but they were kind of, you know, trying to put ice in their hat, and they were like, did you see that the gi like wrestling with his hat for like a good sort of couple minutes every, you know, every other drink station, and they just seemed like they were wasting a lot of energy every drink station, basically.
Yeah, quite a lot of, you know, things you saw during the men and the women's races, really. Yeah. People trying to put ice in crazy places, and like you say, you just like, you waste so much energy trying to do that, and then you stress if you lose the ice. And you know, Kipchoge, I don't think he picked up any ice apart from maybe just to put over his face once in a while. But he spent the least amount of energy, the least amount of stress of anyone in that race. And I know you could say possibly he's a little bit more used to the heat, but we had three Ethiopian DNFs. So maybe not, you know, conditions were tough for everyone. And yeah, he just reigned supreme.
I think that's it. I think people almost being trying to be too clever with the cooling strategies there. We kind of, it was quite exciting to watch as a spectator, but like when you put it like that, it is, there was a lot of faff going along, wasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, staying cool in a marathon is really important, but I think some people are possibly making it a little bit too complex. I mean, you know, if you just throw some water over your head, that's pretty effective in my book. You don't need to run with ice, you know, taped on the back of your vest. I'm not really sure what that's going to do, to be honest.
Yeah, let's talk about the conditions a bit, because Josh, you've experienced, I guess, somewhat similar because you ran the Gold Coast Marathon at the Commonwealth Games. Just explain to our listeners, please, if you don't mind, just how much of a toll it takes, because obviously I think for someone who's just might have switched on the marathon, who's not seen a lot of them, and they see kind of, they hear about Kipchoge, he's this guy who breaks 2 hours and he's running 208. Like, how much of a difference over such a long way can that heat make?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see from the times last night. I know it wasn't a paced race, but we didn't have one personal best, which is like extremely rare. You know, normally we'd have a few people having the best run of their life, but no one ran their PB last night. So, you know, you can tell the conditions weren't ideal. And yeah, I kind of had similar experience in the Gold Coast a couple of years ago where temperatures were high and humidity was fairly high, although it was probably higher last night, given that they were in a city, not by the coast. But yeah, it's massive. I mean, you could see warning signs from Gold Coast that, you know, the kind of effect the heat would have. In the Gold Coast, we had a third of the field drop out and another third of the field literally stagger to the end, and I was one of them. You know, you probably had about eight guys who were happy with the race that day and everyone else just had a shocker. So, you know, I think in Doha, you know, it was kind of really hot, but they moved it to the night, so we didn't have the sunlight. And again, it was by the coast, so maybe it wasn't quite as bad. But, you know, the warning signs were there from previous years that if you didn't respect the heat, then it could get you.
Yeah, man. I mean, talk of heat, did we're talking at drink stations. What do you think of the French geezer's tactic?
Yeah,
please tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it this morning. It's pretty shocking, to be fair. I think if I picked one up behind him, I'd have thrown one at the back of his head. But, I mean, in a race that hot, I know you want to gain an edge in your competitors, but that's so cool.
No, I mean, yeah, that's kind of a side note. But, you know, we talk about the heat, we talk about preparations. Obviously, you talk about DNFs. We had two Brits DNF in Callum and Ben. And Tomo, you know, 54th. I think Tomo came out and, you know, said how brutal it was. And again, we had a lot of DNFs today. What do you think happened with the Brits, man? Do you think, maybe it's me being like a bit, you know, a bit of a side man, like on the bench, like easy to criticize, isn't it? But I'm not sure if they really got, you know, proper warm weather training in that humidity. And I don't know if that would have benefited them or not, but, you know, for marathon people, it's all well and good going to altitude, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you are competing. You know, the Ethiopians, it didn't help them,
you know. No, I mean,
so I wonder if they could have done with better preparation and humidity.
Yeah, I think with COVID, I mean, it's put up so many challenges for athletes. I mean, just with travel, I mean, they've not been able to get to altitude or heat as much as they would have liked. You know, I'm talking about UK athletes now because we have neither. Preparation races as well. Like, normally, I think, you know, you'd go and race maybe in Europe somewhere where it's quite hot, or you might pop over to America just to kind of do a race which is in similar conditions. Haven't been able to do that. We had our trial race, which was, you know, actually a really cold day in March. I know we had to do it in March, but, you know, maybe it's not super specific. Although that said, both trial winners were the highest Brit finishes in the marathons. Yeah. So you could say that the trials actually worked pretty well. But yeah, I mean, preparation, especially for the Brits, I can only speak for the Brits because I don't know what other countries have been like, but it's been really tough, particularly over the winter. And I know that was a long time ago, but it leads in. I mean, if you can't get a physio or get on the track, then you're already starting behind. And you know, when you're already racing guys who are, you know, better than you, given based on times, you're playing catch up from the word go, and it is difficult. So hats off to Chris and to Steph for what I thought was actually good runs in the conditions.
Yeah, I'd second that, man.
I 100%. I think it's been so difficult for people to travel like they'd like to. I think Ben Connor was in Portugal, I think. But I'd imagine he'd have liked to get to some other places that were, a bit more replicative.
And on that, you know, if they can go away for maybe 2 or 3 weeks in the build-up, I mean, it's nice, you get a bit of quality, but you're not really going to acclimatise. What you do in 2 weeks, maybe 2 long runs and 3 workouts, it's not really enough if you want to get used to, like, savage heat for 26 miles.
You saw... I don't know if you've seen actually, but Steve Magnus, you know, I'm sure you follow him, put out the tweet of the study done on heart rate and how it was affected. And, you know, over a 6 mile run, same pace, same time of day, you know what I mean? Virtually the same rested. The heart rate in humidity was way higher than at altitude, than at 7,000 feet altitude, you know, and it shows you. And I think if your heart rate's that high when you're looking at a marathon in the humidity, then obviously you're not going to be able to keep that pace going for very long, you know?
Yeah. And that was one of the things that I experienced in Gold Coast. You know, I was kind of more focused on pace than I was on effort. So pace wise, I knew this as well was in within my marathon pace, but I was just running so much harder than I should have been. And I hit the wall like after halfway, you know.
Or even if, so even if like you just said to yourself, right, I'm going to account for running 10 minutes slower today because of the heat, you were still, you know, on field, you were still working so much harder.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I just massively underestimated it. And, you know, I was naive at the time, but that definitely gave me, you know, if I was to do a hot marathon like that again, I would know, like, you know, I really need to respect the heat, and just because we're not used to it as well, being Brits.
Yeah, I think that's it with heat exhaustion. It's something that does just hit people. There's almost no warning signs. And we saw so many people yesterday that once they got detached from the group, that was it. They were either done or they were stumbling around. And like, fair play to a lot of people who looked like they stumbled around for a lot of the race and still finished. It must be so hard in that situation. So obviously, like, there's part of you wanting, I want to finish. It's the Olympic marathon. Part of you's like, I need to put my health first sometimes. So I don't know how people make that decision. Like, it's a tough one.
It's really tough in the moment. You know, I can only speak back on my experience in the Gold Coast. My aims for the race were out of the window after about 10 miles. And it was like, you know, I wanted to finish so bad. So I just said, you know, I'll either pass out or I'll finish. And I did get to the end okay. But it was a stupid decision, really. But you know, in that moment, there's no way you were going to stop unless you're injured or you just, you know, you don't even know where you are, maybe.
Yeah, well, we look at dropouts, and, you know, three Ethiopians all dropped out. And they are a nation notorious for maybe saving themselves for another day, you know, and they just saying, you know, a lot of these guys, we'll probably see them in a major city marathon in like 2 months' time, in October, November, won't we? You know, I wouldn't be surprised. So they probably had that in the back of their minds as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got last year's London Marathon winner, I think the last Boston Marathon winner, and then you've got Kipruto and Lemo, you know, well up there on the major marathon scene as well. So, I mean, two of the Ethiopians, they dropped out real early. So
really? Yeah.
You know, I think after 5K, because I thought Kitata beforehand maybe had a chance of a medal, and he was gone after like 5K. So,
that was your pick, wasn't it, Matt?
Yeah, mate, he was my bet. And, you know, sometimes you question, did they want to be there or were they carrying injuries? You know, either or. But mate, let's bump up to the front a bit and let's talk about, like, Kipchoge in that top three a little bit more, because that battle for the silver and bronze was fascinating. You know, there's a pack of four of them to about, I want to say, about a K or two to go. And then friendship, Jesus, you know, Bashir Abdi and Abdi Nagy. You know, their friendship, that, you know, the Dutch one was just willing Bashir to just get the bronze medal, wasn't he? And the Kenyan almost let him have it as well. He was like, oh, okay, you know, you can have it almost.
Yeah, I mean, once we got to like 37K, that was the most interesting race. You knew Kipchoge was going to run away with it then. I was more interested in the battle for second because there was four of them. And I was a little bit worried for Nagai at one point because I thought that Abdi would pass him and he'd end up fourth without a medal at all. But, I mean, it worked out in the end, but it was bold to back yourself that much in a kick.
And both, I mean, I thought Abdi Nagy was part of the NN running team, but I think he was also a part of, you know, Mo Farah's Madani team that Mo kind of formed in his prime. Yeah. And Bashir Abdi, definitely a part of that. And I think he's actually coached by Gary Loft. I'm not 100% on that, but I think Gary Loft does have some input on Bashir Abdi's training.
Yeah, I mean, those two ran really well when you consider, I think, if you looked at the start list beforehand, you'd have thought, you know, those two guys should get top 10 and, you know, possibly an outside chance if, you know, things happened as they did. But I would never have guessed Abdi Nagy second and, you know, both of them in the medals. You know, I just thought there was too many guys. Maybe Bashir Abdi, given his performance in Tokyo last year, but not Abdi Nagy.
We had what, three Europeans in the top five? It's almost It's almost unheard of.
Really good.
And Landeseme in fifth. I mean, he's in, you know, he's getting on a bit now. So that was a really impressive run. I don't think many people would have predicted that either.
Nah, shows you on the day. And but the reason why Kipchoge ran away with it is he dropped, was it between 30 and 35K? He dropped to 14, 28, 5K. You know, and he just made it look so easy. Backed it up with a sub-15, 5K after that as well. And it just basically broke up the whole field, didn't it, Josh?
Yeah, but, you know, coming back to that, I know 14, 28, 5K sounds insane at that part of the race, but it's actually slower than his PB pace. So, you know, it kind of just shows that all he did was raise his game to his personal best for 5K and it just blew apart the race. So I think it just kind of shows that he was just a class above yesterday. And, you know, he just absolutely destroyed the field and destroyed his two Kenyan teammates in the process. But, it was a really big move because of that part in the race. It's make or break. And he made his race there.
Do you think he was thinking, oh, I'm going to get just like work with the group and then I'm going to drop a big 5K and maybe 10K? Or was it a bit more? Because I think some people thought he'd go a bit later maybe.
Yeah, I don't think I was expecting him to go as early as 30K, particularly with the group the size it was, I thought. And it was quite like an obvious injection of pace. Usually he kind of just winds it up a bit more gradual and eases away from the field over a number of Ks, but within about a K he built a gap and then it kind of just grew. I think the guys behind respected the man that was running away from them and they kind of just knew then that their race was for second place.
Do you think the field was a bit weak, mate, or do you think it just looks weak after the race because you know, maybe times weren't there, or you know, a lot of DNFs and stuff?
I think if you look on paper, you know, you've got loads of major marathon winners. You know, the three Ethiopians, they're not on the results, but they were on the start list. So I think, you know, it's the Olympic marathon. Every single man there's 106 guys who've run under 2:11:30 on the start yesterday. It's just conditions. You've almost got to forget about the times when conditions are like that. And I mean, there's no appearance fee. There's no prize money, apart from like endorsements and stuff. So maybe some will save themselves for another day, but I would never call it weak because, you know, the 106th guy on the start list has run under 2:11:30.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously we've got medalists from Rio, Galen Rupp, like finishing down in eighth place. Like, what did you think of him? Because at one point he almost hit the front and he started making a little bit of a move. I was like, wow, are we going to see a Rupp show?
Yeah, so before the race, my picks were Kipchoge, Chirono and Rupp. Katata. And then when Katata dropped out, I put Rupp in for third. But up to about 30K, he was looking good. But that move that Kipchoge made was just, he was one of the guys that suffered from that. And I thought he did really well because the conditions, I think, aren't going to be that suited to him either, coming from, you know, I think he spends most of his time in Portland, which I don't think is particularly hot. But you could see him with his ice tactics and trying to keep himself out of trouble as much as he could. And I thought he did a good job, but I think conditions just got to him in the end, like they did for most.
Yeah, I think that's it. And like looking at Rob's career, like he's had a phenomenal run to still be top 10 in the Olympics. Like we talk about Kipchoge, and obviously Kipchoge's almost another level with kind of the longevity of his career. But Rupp's obviously got a silver in 2012 in the 10K, bronze in Rio, and he's still coming eighth in Tokyo, and obviously with the five-year gap as well. It's just great to see. And I also just want to touch on Suguru, because I think I said yesterday on our pod, I thought Suguru might do something special. And yeah, he didn't quite get a medal, but the way he ran that race, like he fought for a medal all the way, and he almost looked, it was like sad to see kind of how he looked a bit upset at the end. With himself almost, I think, for letting him go, because he was closing a little bit, but he ran so tough. And like, fair play, like to be sick guy in the Olympics in front of a home crowd, it's a pretty special run.
On Suguru, I think he thought they would come back. I think he thought at the time, you know what I mean, the conditions are hot, this breaks too quick, I'm going to let them go. And they just didn't come back. So I think a part of him might just think, oh, if only I'd gone with him.
Yeah, it's kind of a gamble you have to make in a marathon, particularly when, you know, it's just championships. All that's on the line is the top three. You don't get anything for fourth. So, you know, you either kind of run at your pace that you know you can maintain, hoping that a couple of those guys have overcooked it. And a couple of them did, but three of them held on. Whereas if you go with it, you know that, you know, you're running kind of above the level at which you'd be comfortable at, and you are at risk of then blowing up yourself. So it's a gamble and it's tough to make in the moment. I mean, unless you're running in 30 degree heat at like 2:07 pace, they were probably running when the break happened. It's hard to judge, but yeah, I mean, hats off to him. He was carrying the hopes of Japan. And yeah, I still think that's a really good result. I think it's the first top six in quite a long time in the marathon in the Olympics. So yeah, big run.
Mate, how long, one of the things I want to sort of finish up on is, how long do you think we're going to see Kipchoge still dominating marathons? Because it looked like he had a blip in London and he looks almost, you know, back to his best. He's only ever lost, what, two marathons in his lifetime?
Yeah, he's not finished first in two. And in one of them, there was a world record ahead of him. And it was the second marathon, I believe. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the dominance over so long as well. His first marathon was 8 years ago. So, and these aren't just any marathons. They're like London, Berlin, World Champs, Olympics. I mean, they're as good as they get. So, yeah, I mean, I think just enjoy him while we still can. And he doesn't look like he's anywhere near done, but you don't want to see him fade away either. So it'll be interesting to see what he thinks, because I guess, you know, I guess he'll want to do maybe do London next year or Berlin and maybe see what he can do, but there's probably not too long left.
I think he came out and said he wants to win all the majors.
Oh, I'd love to see him do some
the next few years. Yeah, I think that's what he said. I saw somewhere on Twitter.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he's phenomenal, and I think we can put the crown of greatest marathoner of all time on his head. But people have started putting him in the question of greatest distance runner of all time as well. And I just wanted to know what your guys' thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to be right up there, hasn't he, in the conversation. I mean, he's got three Olympic medals over different distances, ranging back from, I think, 2004. Or 2008, he won a bronze in the 5K, and then he's medaling still in 2021. I mean, he's won marathons in loads of different countries. He's run really well indoors, outdoors, on the track, over 1500, 3K, 5K, 10K, half marathon and marathon. So it's some range. You know, he's not the only one with that range, but he's, you know, he should be in the conversation and right at the top of it, to be honest. You know, it's hard to compare across some events. Like, you know, Kipchoge can only win one medal at an Olympics, whereas Farah was in two races. I know he won both, but, you know, they both won all the races that they were entered into. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough to distinguish between, you know, those two and Bukele and a couple of others. But, yeah, he's right up there for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I feel like what he's starting to do now and just being so dominant, you know, I'd probably say. And I think the marathon always gets a little bit overlooked on the track in comparison to the track as well at the Olympic Games. And I don't know why. I just think because with the marathon, I think when you win a major, it's almost a bigger deal than winning the Olympics, just because of the history and the majors and usually the fields that are assembled. So I think it's a shame he never won a gold on the track. But yeah, you probably would argue. And I mean, could he go on to Paris and get three marathon goals? That would, you know, completely finalize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's definitely in the question. I think for me, like some of the others, like Bukele and Haile, and maybe even Farah, for like your overall, I'd probably still put ahead of him. But I think I just want to touch upon Kipchoge's influence on the sport to wider audiences, because I think he's done more than them. Say, I think Kipchoge is someone, we talked about household names yesterday, Matt, and I think he's someone who has become such a household name, like with the Breaking 2 projects and things like that. People who probably don't even care about track and field at all know who Kipchoge is, because they were like, what, this guy's trying to run a sub-2-hour marathon? And I mean, stuff like that is just phenomenal for the sport. He really opened a lot of people's eyes to the marathon. He was all people were talking about in relation to the shoes, which as well have opened people's eyes into athletics. So that's such a good thing. Like, I think the only person like similar to that would probably be Bolt, like on the complete other end of the scale, who just opens up interest from outside of your classic athletics fan. But I think that's pretty much wraps us up for the marathon. How's things going with you anyway, Josh? Like, how's training going for you? Have you got any races coming up that we can announce for some of our listeners?
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, since Kew Gardens, I've done a few 5Ks, a 10K, and working towards a half marathon now, which is coming up soon, and then an October marathon. I can't say which one yet, but all will be revealed soon. But yeah, everything's going well. And it's good to have races back. And not only for me, but it's good to see so many other people having the opportunity to race as well, because, you know, there's been points during the last 18 months where you've been able to do pretty much everything but race. So it's good to see people being able to do what they enjoy.
You're obviously coaching as well, aren't you, Josh? So like, how's that been? Like, obviously your athletes themselves being able to get out and race as well. How's that been as a coach?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, some of the ups and downs over the last 18 months I've had myself as an athlete trying to look for races, and, you know, I've been in a position where I've been able to race, whereas some haven't. But it's been just devastating to, you know, see people work so hard for so many races and, you know, then they get cancelled at the last minute, or, you know, just plans change. And yeah, it's just so sad. So to have races back, it's just nice to have. It's like everyone in the running community is just in a much better mood at the moment. There's a lot more positivity. I mean, even things like Parkrun are coming back. Mm-hmm. I know there's loads of people looking forward to doing stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I just think we're in a much better position now, and hopefully we can just, you know, press on from here no matter what the months in the future hold.
Yeah, hopefully all the, you know, cancelled races and whatever are behind us. Mate, do you have any news on like qualifying for the World Champs Marathon or Europeans or Commonwealth at all? You know, what's the close aim for you, man?
Yeah, so I've already got the qualifying time for the Commonwealth Games in Birmingham next year. So, you know, that's exciting. Obviously, the last one was in Australia, you know, which was pretty cool. But, you know, this one being at home, you can have some friends and family come, which is nice. And, you know, conditions aren't such a concern because they're going to be what I've trained in all summer beforehand. So that's nice. And then obviously, you know, if I run well in the next couple of marathons, then there's obviously World Champs and Europeans to aim for as well. World Champ standard is 2:11:30. So I'll need to go a little bit faster than I have done so far. But, you know, when I run my 2:13:11, it was in conditions which maybe weren't ideal, bit of rain, bit of wind, so, and no crowd. So yeah, it'll be nice to kind of get back this autumn and run with a crowd. Hopefully the weather gods are on my side and it's a bit nicer. But yeah, no, honestly, I'm just enjoying being back racing and excited to be back over 26.2 with some crowd, hopefully.
Absolutely, man. I think it will be, you know, the London Marathon is always amazing and we're going to be kind of spoilt with one in October and one in April. I think they're still going ahead with the 2022 one in April, aren't they? So
yeah, so this autumn they'll be in London in October and then they're going back to their normal April slot, same as like Boston and a few others. I think everything hopefully next year will be back to where it should be.
Touch wood, man.
Yeah, wow. Right, exciting times, man. Just thanks so much for coming on, Josh. Good to have you back.
Pleasure.
Perfect. Cheers for listening, guys. We'll catch you next week now. That's the last of our Tokyo bonus episodes, so I hope you've enjoyed them.